We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, the divisions of faith, text number 28. Ashradaya hutam datam tapastaptam kritam chaya asat ichuchate parata Na cha tat pretya na hi ha, no hi ha. Ashradaya, without faith. Hutam, offered in sacrifice. Datam, given. Tapaha, penance. Taptam, executed. Kritam, performed. Cha, also. Yat, that which. Asat, false. Iti, thus. Uchite, is said to be. Partha, osanaprita. Na, never. Cha, also. Tat, that. Pretya, after death. Na'u, nur. Iha, in this life. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, and penance, without faith in the Supreme, osanaprita, is impermanent. It is called asat, and is useless, both in this life and the next. For what anything done without the transcendental objective, whether it be sacrifice, charity, and penance, is useless. Therefore, in this verse, it is declared that such activities are abominable. Everything should be done for the Supreme in Krishna consciousness. Without such faith and without the proper guidance, there can never be any fruit. In all the Vedic scriptures, faith in the Supreme is advised. In the pursuit of all Vedic instructions, the ultimate goal is the understanding of Krishna. No one can obtain success without following this principle. Therefore, the best course is to work from the very beginning in Krishna consciousness under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the way to make everything successful. In the conditional state, people are attracted to worshipping demigods, ghosts, or yakshas like Kuvara. The mode of goodness is better than the modes of passion and ignorance. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all the three modes of material nature. Although there is a process of gradual elevation, if one by the association of pure devotees takes directly to Krishna consciousness, that is the best way. That is recommended in this chapter. To achieve success in this way, one must first find the proper spiritual master and receive training under his direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme. When that faith matures in course of time, it is called love of God. This love is the ultimate goal of the living entities. One should therefore take to Krishna consciousness. That is the message of this 17th chapter. As in the Bhaktivedanta Purports to the 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the matter of the divisions of faith. Ashradaya hutam datam tapastaptam shikrikam tayat asari chichite partha na chate tat pretinohiha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, and penance without faith in the Supreme, osana pritha, is impermanent, is called asat, and is useless both in this life and the next. With this verse, the Bhagavad Gita is finished. There's another chapter that will explain the whole, summarize the entire Bhagavad Gita again. But here the word used is ashradaya. So ashrada means faith. Everyone has some faith in something. Whatever we put our consciousness onto, we're going to gain some experience from that. And whatever experience we have, we're going to develop some kind of faith in it. Now, generally speaking, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is based upon glorification. The spiritual world is also based upon glorification. In other words, advertisement. If the advertisement is excellent, expert, and appropriate to the audience, then people become attracted to something, whatever it might be. The whole modernist civilization is based upon glorifying something which may be significant or completely insignificant. As Prahlad Maharaj said, Materna Krishne Paratakstatova Mito Bipadyeta Griha Ratanam Adanda Gobir Vishatam Dimizram Punak Punas Charvata Charvananam. Matira means our consciousness. So everyone has consciousness. Right now we're conscious of this body, at least. And being conscious of this body, we can experience the body has certain needs. Without fulfilling the needs, we can't stay in the body. And since this body is the closest thing to us right now that we understand, that we're aware of, therefore we'd like to stay in it. Because we don't know where we're going to go after we leave it. So we might as well stay around for some time. And in order to do that, we have to fulfill the needs, like eating and sleeping and perhaps mating and defending. And therefore, that's where our consciousness goes. If the body says, I'm thirsty, then we look for water. If it says we're tired, we look for a place to go to sleep. So our existence right now is more or less trying to fulfill the needs of the body so we can exist in the body for as long as possible. And hopefully our means of satisfying the needs of the body also gives us a kind of happiness or pleasure, if not relief from the miseries that we experience from the demands of the body. So everyone is trying to make arrangements, either gross or subtle, in the world, to try to find some kind of satisfaction for the body and the senses, because that way, indirectly, we become satisfied. If we think, today, I checked off everything on my list, now I can go to sleep peacefully and happily. The perfection of existence. But Bhagavad Gita is explaining about another level of experience. That level of experience can be experienced indirectly. The indirect method is by karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and then finally bhakti yoga. Karma yoga being dutiful activities with the recognition that this world belongs to the Supreme Person, and therefore we are obligated to do what He wants us to do. So that will take care of our minds to some extent, because when we don't know what to do, we don't know what the ultimate objective is, why we're doing anything, obviously we're going to be in a little anxiety. Without knowing what the purpose of existence is, if we just think the purpose of existence is to make money and enjoy life, then obviously we're not going to be very satisfied, because no one can make enough money to actually enjoy life. Since whatever enjoyment we have is temporary, and then we have to die, we have to leave this body, it seems rather futile to work hard, maintain a body that ultimately disappears. It can't be the ultimate goal. It can't be a goal of life that will give us true happiness. It's almost like the prisoner is condemned to death and he's offered a very good meal before he's going to die, the day before. Now, most prisoners, I imagine, probably lose their taste, their appetite. If tomorrow you have to die, you may have nice pizza and ice cream, but somehow or another, it's not going to be very as pleasant as if you thought you had, you didn't know you were going to be executed the next day. Now, all of us, we know we're going to be executed either today or tomorrow, and therefore, we're always a little bit fearful at every moment. When is that time coming? As I mentioned before about the astrologer, and the king wanted to know who is a good astrologer in his kingdom. So he called the first astrologer, and he asked the astrologer, how many days do you have left to live? And the astrologer did some calculation. The first one said, 20 years, sir. The king said, you're wrong. And he took him outside. He had the soldiers take him outside and execute the astrologer. So he was wrong by 20 years. That way he called for all the astrologers in his kingdom and went after another. They gave their estimation how long they had left to live. Unfortunately, they were all wrong and they all got executed. Finally, he called for one astrologer and asked the astrologer, how long do you have left to live? And he said, it's up to the king. The king said, you're a bona fide astrologer. So no one really knows exactly the timeline, and therefore everyone is fearful. And therefore all our attempts, if we don't know what our duty is, and we think our duty is just to make money and enjoy the senses, then obviously we don't know any higher purpose, and therefore we're living like animals. I'm not against animals. Some animals are quite cute and cuddly. But to live like an animal is not very exciting in terms of progress in actual life. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita and all Vedic scriptures point out that there's such a person as the Supreme. Now, even if people don't believe in that, even if they only believe in Brahman or Paramatma or something, parts of the Supreme, still, if anyone who does dutiful activities, according to the Vedas, then the result is that they won't be as much anxiety. Duty, of course, means there is certain duties for the Shudras. For instance, the Shudras are not supposed to kill animals or engage in unlimited illicit sex or meat-eating or gambling in order to regulate the senses, because it's the senses that causes disturbance. So duty means to regulate the senses above everything, not to let them simply go wild, to restrain them. Restrain them means that everyone has to eat, but eating too much is not healthy, is problematic. There's no reason to eat too much. Getting sick is not the purpose of life. So that's called shreyas and prayas. In dutiful activity, there's prayas. Actually, there's shreyas, long-term results. Therefore, if one eats what's necessary, then one will not get sick, and one will get energy in order to do his service, his duty. Similarly, sleeping is not necessary to sleep 6 months out of the year, like a bear. It may be the duty of a bear to do that. The human beings don't have to do that. Therefore, the ultimate aim of life is not peaceful sleep. Although sleeping is necessary, but it's necessary to the extent that it will help the body become strong and healthy to execute some higher purpose of life. Similarly, sex life can be utilized to produce good children, but to have unrestricted sex life or to be always in anxiety about protecting the body and the mind and our ego simply is problematic because it's quite disturbing. And if the mind is disturbed, it's very hard to hear anything of higher knowledge. Now, Shudras are just trying to people in the mode of ignorance are just trying to regulate the senses to the best they can, which is actually glorious if one can do that, follow some rule and regulation. So the more one can do that, the more one can hear. And the first thing Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is Deno Sminyata Dehe Homaram Yovanam Jara Tatadahantara Praptir Diryas Tatra Namuyati. The first hint of something beyond the body, the soul, that we are ourselves a soul. Now, 99.99% of all the knowledge in this world, in the present day society, simply concerns the gross and subtle body. There's little understanding of the gross, and there's probably less understanding of the subtle body in modern society. But that's what the main concern is. But Krishna explains that actually the body is changing. Now, most of us know it, but we don't like to think about it very much. But at least Krishna tells us to spend a few seconds thinking about how the body's changing, but we ourselves within the body, we're not changing. So that should give us great hope that we're eternal. So that's good news. Matter of fact, if you read the newspapers today, which I don't suggest you do, you won't find any better news than the fact that we're eternal. And you probably won't find that in the newspapers either. You will find it in the Bhagavad Gita, though. So the Bhagavad Gita is much more encouraging than any other book that we could probably read. And that's only the beginning of being encouraged. Bhagavad Gita says we're eternal, and there's the process of realizing that we're eternal. It's not that we're eternal and we're doomed to be an illusion thinking that we're temporary. There's a process by which we can actually wake up and realize our eternality. And what could be a better gift than that? If someone came and said, here's the red pill, and here's the blue pill? Is that what it was? Here's two pills. Choose one. One, you'll stay in the material world, you'll live here forever suffering, or take the blue pill, and you'll wake up and realize you're eternal. Which one would you take? The blue or the red pill? The blue one. Well, that's good. That's why we're here. So this Bhagavad Gita is the blue pill. It's at least telling us where the pills are, which we can take gradually, to wake up. And that's the first thing to do, is to try to regulate the senses by engaging them in Krishna service, called devotional service. And that's what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about, in the beginning at least. To chant Hare Krishna, to try and hear the holy name, to try to hear about Krishna, try and hear what this material world is about, who we are, how the karma works. Matter of fact, there are five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita. The Supreme, the Ishvara, who is all attractive, has all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all strength, and all renunciation. And he's speaking Bhagavad Gita. So that means the Bhagavad Gita is, theoretically, is perfect knowledge, because it's spoken by a person who knows everything. And then there is the jiva, ourselves. So now we think we're material, we think everyone else is material, but actually we're a jiva soul. That is, we're an eternal spirit soul, an expansion of Krishna, a part of him, part and parcel, not as great as him, but qualitatively equal to him. And then there is the material nature called prakriti that we're experiencing right now. And then there's karma, which under the laws of karma, we get different material circumstances. Under kala, which is time. So these are the five subject matters. And the more we find out about Krishna, about ourselves, about how the material nature works, the more we find out about how time is working on everything, and what karma is, and how to become free from it, then the more we develop faith in Bhagavad Gita, which is ultimately Krishna. Ultimately, comes down to understanding everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. And ultimately, it's quite simple. Karma yoga means everything here belongs to Krishna, and therefore it's meant for Krishna's service. Jnana yoga means that we're eternal, and that the goal of life is liberation from the material concept of life. Astanga yoga means that the goal of life beyond liberation is to meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and bhakti yoga means to serve Him with love, that the ultimate goal of life is pure ecstatic love for Krishna and for everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. Now one can take it step by step, from dutiful activities to knowledge to meditation to loving service, or one can simply try to do loving service to Krishna. And therefore, if the more one does that, the more Krishna is pleased by our attempts to do that, then automatically one improves in dutiful activities, understanding one's spiritual nature, ability to meditate upon the Supreme. If one gets love for Krishna, one gets everything else along with it. So that's the message of Bhagavad Gita. There are ways of approaching Krishna, but the best way is by bhakti, simply dancing, chanting, and taking prasadam. It may not get us the recognition as if you could stand on one finger. As we can see, no one's coming to the temple room and photographing the devotees at a normal kirtan. But if one of us could go and down to Tivoli Park and stand on our fingernail, then so many people gather around, tell us that we're almost God, and take pictures, interview us. How do we ever develop such amazing power? And we may think we've accomplished something. Unfortunately, eventually our fingernail will break and we won't be able to stand on it any longer, and we'll have to enter another body, and all our accomplishments will be forgotten. Therefore, if we wake up and realize the wonderful nature of spiritual life through gradually cultivating devotional service, then when we get the capacity to experience Krishna directly, then we'll understand, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, we'll think that there's no greater gain than this. There can't be any greater gain than experiencing unlimited love and bliss in relationship to the most attractive, unlimitedly attractive personality of Godhead and His equally unlimited attractive associates. Then the desire for loving exchanges with someone will be able to be experienced by unlimited loving exchanges forever with the most loving, affectionate, attractive people eternally. Therefore, this Bhagavad Gita is the greatest gift for humanity. It's a question of developing faith in it by simply, theoretically at least, accepting that it's possible that I might be eternal. That should be clarified by use of our intelligence, by the very simple fact that our body is changing, but we're not changing. Everyone can experience that. Even a child can experience that. The ever-changing bodies that we have, but the fact that we're experiencing them, but the person who's experiencing them is not changing. His experience is changing as the body changes and the mind changes, as our intelligence changes. So realizing that we're eternal, at least understanding to some extent, we can understand that there's no book that explains things as nicely as that, as Bhagavad Gita. And at the same time, based upon that understanding, we can understand that, yes, there must be some real reason why, although I'm eternal, but now I think I'm this temporary body. There must be some reason why. Now, we may love our body, and everyone does love their body. Otherwise, why would we spend so much time taking care of it? So we don't want to give up. We're not going to give up our love for this body and things in relation to this body very easily, nor should we have to. But we should try to love ourselves at the same time, our real self. We may take care of this body very nicely, Matter of fact, we should take care of it as nicely as necessary, but we should learn to love ourselves also. The real self. We should work for our real self as we struggle in material existence to work for our external selves. And at the same time, when we discover the Supreme, we'll find out as we love ourselves because we're a particle of the Supreme Self. And if we're a particle of the Supreme Self and we love ourselves so much, our real self, that is, the soul, how much more will we love the Supreme, who's unlimitedly more lovable than we are? But the nice thing is that the Supreme, Krishna, although he's unlimitedly more lovable than anyone, but he loves everyone more than he loves himself. So he takes the little tiny soul or ourselves as the object of his unlimited love. So that's a very nice relationship. We love the unlimited, and the unlimited loves us. And that goes on forever, and there's no... Krishna becomes more attractive, and the soul becomes more attractive forever in that loving exchange. And it gets more and more loving. Now try that out every year, if everything becomes more wonderful and loving. Isn't that better than every year you get a new car? A new model car made of plastic and metal. Which is more exciting? Getting a new car or getting a more and more loving relationship? Now we know, even in modern society, all these magazines and all these different newspapers, all the advertisement, all the industry, the technology, is just promising. Is it promising just to get new cars and new computers and new dresses or whatever else? Is it promising that these things will help develop our loving relationships? If not with our husband or our wife or our children, at least with our dog or our cat. Or nowadays they want to develop a loving relationship with a machine, a robot, because the robot won't talk back to them, hopefully. They just want someone who will do whatever they want them to, whatever they want, even if it's a robot. But everyone wants a relationship with people who have a loving relationship with them, which means they're surrendered to them. Everyone wants someone to surrender to them, to think that they're supreme, that they're lovable, whatever, that they'll obey them and follow them and serve them. If it's only a machine, that's all right. Or the dog. Or the goldfish. Imagine the goldfish. You have a loving relationship with the goldfish in the aquarium. Every time you go to the aquarium, the goldfish comes to the front of the glass and starts kissing the glass, welcoming you. So the material world is based upon imagination that we're having a loving affair with some kind of part of the material nature, but it never satisfies us. And even if we do have a nice relationship, it can't last forever. And therefore it's even more distressful when you have something so sweet, so nice, the nicest thing you have, and then you lose it forever. So the material world is destined to be a disappointment, but it's only a reflection of the real world. And our real relationship with the most lovable person who loves us unlimitedly, and we love him unlimitedly also. And all his devotees too, are equally as lovable unlimitedly as Krishna is. And this is Bhakti Yoga that Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, is the path to develop that experience. And if one hears a path, tries to remember it, try to assimilate it, understand it, and try to live according to it, then gradually that loving experience, that unlimited happiness, that limited true awareness of things will gradually develop within one by Krishna's mercy. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? So what did everyone understand from the class? We'll ask our scholar first. Ananta, what did you understand from the class? Given unto the...
I tried to write down something.
What is that? What is it called? Reader 2 or something? What is the name of your pad called?
Remarkable.
Remarkable too.
Yeah, it doesn't go to that brain.
They're advertising that on the internet.
Awesome.
It's commercial.
I try to grasp the presentation, how you present this. Basically two level of experience. One is on the bodily level through the senses, and you quote this famous shloka from Prahlad Maharaj, chewing the chuvd. Those who doesn't have control mind, they can never understand Krishna consciousness, right? And then you give this example with enjoying sleeping, and then you went to there is another higher level experience, and you explain about from the Karma Yoga and other levels of yogas described in the Bhagavad Gita, and many times you mentioned that this is how Bhagavad Gita gradually brings one to higher levels of experience, which is out in Bhakti Yoga, loving relationship with Krishna. You also mentioned this nice principle about Shreyas and Prayas. Shreyas means immediate pleasure, and Shreyas a long-term pleasure, which begins with dutiful activities, Karma Yoga. And of course, the ultimate Shreyas is, you know, reviving a loving relationship with Krishna. Okay, then you mentioned about the Hinusmin Shloka, where you express that everything starts beginning with being eternal. That we should take a blue pill, not red, which means experiencing spiritual existence. And you mentioned the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita: Jiva, Prakriti, Karma, Kala, and Ishvara. And by understanding how they are related, we develop faith to follow through these stages of from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. And that gradually lead us, yes, to invoke the loving relationship with Krishna. This is how I wrote down.
That's remarkable.
Not much consistent, but something.
That's remarkable.
Hare Krishna.
I can't imagine what Remarkable 3 could do.
Understand what I wrote down. Or apply.
Oh, that's Remarkable 5.
Yeah. The GPT.
So what did you understand, Mukunda? That's all you have to understand.
I asked him to bring the paper and to write down, but he bring the paper.
The paper first that.
Well, go ahead.
No, I just understood that there is the blue pill and that we wake up in the spiritual world. But basically that we understand that we are spiritual beings and that we, it's beyond only the news of today. That there is, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, there is news from the spiritual world which is much more big than, you know, the news of everyday here, which is temporary and just flickering in some way.
Yes.
Thank you.
What did you understand from the class? Yes.
Primos. Hare Krishna. I want to ask so about the eternity of us. It's how can we deepen this realization? So should we like follow the process and this will come with it, or is it a thing that you have to try to be conscious about on mundane by doing mundane things?
Well, being conscious of the fact that we're eternal won't help us very much. To act as if we're eternal, that will help us. to act as acting as if we're eternal means devotional service to Krishna. If we do that, then Krishna, when he sees we're sincere in trying to become the servant of his servants, then he reveals himself to us, and then everything is revealed at the same time. Krishna, just like when the sun comes up, in the light of the sun, one can see the sun, one can see oneself, and everyone and everything in relation to the sun, as it actually is, in the light of the sun. So if we become conscious of Krishna, then everything, including our own eternity, will be revealed to us. Would you like to say something, Madhuri? Okay, we'll have a...
Thanks. For what I understood, sorry, my English is not so good, so sometimes it's hard for me to understand. We are used to take care about the body, but the spiritual life is, if you see outside the society, it's more hard to see that everybody takes care about the spiritual life. And in correlation with the lecture, I think that if you take care of the body, but you don't take care about your spiritual life, the things that your body or your mind do will not be in Krishna. So that's, I think that is the connection between what you say and the lecture, that it has to be, you have to take care of your body, but to help your spiritual and your to do your body do things for Krishna, I mean.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. What language do you speak?
Sorry?
Which language do you speak?
Spanish.
Oh, yo también.
Bueno saberlo.
What is that?
Bueno saberlo.
Oh, bueno saberte también. ¿De qué país?
Argentina.
Argentina, tan lejos. Yo tengo algunos amigos en Argentina también.
Muy bien.
¿En Buenos Aires?
Bueno, yo soy de Buenos Aires.
Por supuesto.
Sí.
What did you understand, Akshaya?
From the lecture or from the day that I experienced?
Well, let's try the lecture first. Unless your whole day was like a lecture.
I was doing other things during the lecture, so I was not a good listener. And what I realize now is that I should more focus on lecture and be at lecture to then have something to say, not just having excuses. So thank you, Gurudev.
What is it? Shrednya? Shrednya? What is that? Good luck?
Srechno.
Srechno. Okay. Okay, who else is there? Lalita Govinda.
I understood everything, but remember a lot missing. Yes, not a lot.
Quite. Yes.
But for me it was very nice that you say Krishna is a lovable person and he loves his minute, tiny parcel and allow them to love him
unlimitedly.
Yeah, unlimitedly. Always.
Yes.
This was highlight for me. Because Krishna is so lovable.
Yes, he's unlimitedly lovable all the time.
Yeah.
He can give unlimited love to every one of his individual parts.
Yeah. Always.
And yes.
Haribol. Ananta Prabhu remarkably already said everything, but at the beginning you said Bhagavad Gita theoretically is perfect knowledge because it was spoken by a perfect person. And in the end, the material world in the long term is destined for disappointment. So it's a shadow world or false world. This is was quite
yes. Very good. Dwork. Think positive. And then we have some Shinga next. Just say Hare Krishna at least.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Perfect. The Shinga. Okay. Hvala, spasiba. Gracias. Grantaraj Bhagavad Gita ki jai.